the restaurants you love, the food you crave, and the people that make it all happen. We tell their stories on the Paper Trails podcast with Albemarle Paper Supply.
What's going on, guys? It is Nick Calgaron-Mitros, host of the Paper Trails podcast, and we are back for episode 9. I am super fired up to have Jasmine from Beyond Amazing Donuts. We actually have some mutual friends, and so actually Kyle from Community Matters Cafe, who was a guest a few episodes ago, actually introduced us. And I'm super excited to have you on the show and be a guest and talk about pastries and donuts and your journey in, you know, owning your own company. You know, you just started a business last year. And so it's very, very exciting. If you guys do not know, Beyond Amazing Donuts is down here in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is, what area are we considered here?
Like the Myers Park, Montfort area, I believe. Yeah.
So yeah, the Myers Park area, because I was like, it's not Dilworth. It's no. It's, so okay. So anyway, very, very excited to have Jasmine on the pod to just talk about her journey, you know, in hospitality, you know, the whole thing, and just kind of learning her background, and more importantly, inspiring all of us to continue to get uncomfortable and go out there and, you know, learn and grow in whatever industry we're in, whether we're in food. The food space or not, you know? I think one of the things that I enjoy most about having conversations like this, Jasmine, is that, you know? I mean, just, you know, a journey, a step into business ownership can be a little scary sometimes, you know? But, you know, it can be fun. It can be very rewarding. It's a cool project that we're starting, you know, that you're starting. And it's just, you know, you get to meet a lot of cool people and people that join your team and help. And so it's just... I love the whole project, the whole piece of it. So, okay. So let's kind of back up a little bit.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about where you're from, your interest in food and hospitality and the whole thing. And so let's go there. Where are you from originally?
So I'm from Thomasville, North Carolina. I would say I got my start in food because growing up, my grandmother used to cook pretty much three solid meals. And I was the one grandchild that was hungrier than most. So she was just like, Jazz, you know, these are the meals I've laid out. If you want more, you have to get in the kitchen and learn how to cook for yourself.
Okay.
And so that's what happened. It started with her basically telling me I was greedy, and then also having a few Easy Bake Oven that I essentially like destroyed and turned into other things. But yeah, my grandma was kind of like the first person to tell me, like, get into the kitchen. And then I started playing with a few things, really simple, like spaghetti or a lot of baked items.
Okay.
But then I was like, oh, I can do cakes, cookies. And that's when I really started to play a lot with the Easy Bake Oven. But as you get older, you realize it's just a light bulb in there, and I'm not really doing anything but mixing water, and I don't know what that stuff was. And so I just took an interest a little bit more to really, like, expand at a early age, I would say, and I burnt a lot of stuff. I burnt my hands a bunch of times, and my grandma just kind of let me do whatever in the kitchen.
Okay.
Yeah.
What? So how old are you at this time? Like, when you really start kind of, like, playing around, like, grandma's actually, like, letting you kind of... You know.
The statement of being greedy had to be early, like 5 or 6, because my appetite, I would say, is pretty insatiable. But in terms of her being okay with me in the kitchen, likely like 10 or 11.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, question, grandma's best dish, what is it?
So this is going to sound weird, but it was kind of like, she just ate like fried apples.
Okay.
Yeah, like fried apples was her thing.
Okay.
And my sisters and I cannot do it the way that she did. She would just get like a cast iron skillet and, I don't know, just like chop up the apple some type of way, brown sugar, a little bit of butter, whatever spices. But her apples were always the best. And we've tried to do it. It does not taste like grandma's.
Hey, listen, you can't mess with grandma's recipe, not okay?
At all. And it was just something as like...
That sounds so good,
fried
though.
Fried apples or stewed apples, whatever she called them. Uh-huh. But they were really good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So you started pretty young.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So obviously, it sounds like grandma had a big influence over learning and just experimenting. And it sounds like pretty early you kind of gravitated towards desserts, pastries, cakes, stuff like that?
Because I didn't like touching raw meat.
Okay.
I thought raw meat was just disgusting. And okay. I was like, I can't do that. So we're going to move away from the meats and go more so towards like breads and cakes.
Okay.
So I did a lot of like, you know, playing with Duncan Hines or Betty Crocker. But I was just like, oh, I can actually do this from scratch. So I would look up recipes. This is when like AOL was a thing and startup. So you would hear all the noise and there would be fights about who was on the like internet because you couldn't be on the phone. And I would just like be there looking up stuff or videos on how to bake cakes from scratch or cookies from scratch. And so I started really simple with like a basic yellow cake and chocolate frosting because that's my mom's favorite. And eventually I started to play with like chocolate chip cookies and I would take stuff to school. I had a teacher, her name was Miss Carpenter. She was like the food and nutrition or home economics teacher.
Yeah.
Eventually she became our culinary teacher also, but I loved her class. I loved her. She was really sweet. And I would say she also kind of helped me figure out that I wanted to go to a culinary school.
Okay.
So I would just take her stuff like, Miss Carpenter, I made this. Miss Carpenter, I made this. Miss Carpenter, when are we going to do this in your class? Because by this time, I met Miss Carpenter when I was in sixth grade.
Okay.
So Miss Carpenter taught me from sixth grade all the way to being a senior. The joys of a small town. But yeah, she really fostered my willingness to be in the kitchen.
Sure.
To like go a little further than just eating stuff, like actually making it and then being satisfied with what I created.
Shout out Miss Carpenter, right? So she really kind of like stoked the flame, it sounds like, right?
She did. I think she was the first teacher that I had that took my interest and really kind of just heard what I was saying. Because I didn't really know at that time so much, I don't know, about culinary or like chefs out there. Thomasville didn't have a culinary course until I became, I think, a junior.
Okay.
So I didn't know what options were out there for somebody who was quite interested in food the way that I was. Like I had was Food Network and the Travel Channel, sure. And I would watch those shows. But being in a small town, the resources aren't always there.
Sure.
So
I don't think my high school even had a culinary. Like I'm surprised that
we did. We only had nine students. The first class.
Yeah.
Well,
that's cool though.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, like, it sounded like you knew in high school that you wanted to go down the culinary path. Like, you wanted to go to culinary school?
I knew that I wanted to do something in, like, food service, hotel tourism.
Okay.
I don't know. I watched a lot of the Travel Channel and, like, HGTV, Food Network. So, I was like, I kind of want to do something service-wise, be it in hotels or restaurants. I wasn't quite sure, though.
Okay.
I wasn't quite sure. I had a lot of ideas, but I always kept coming back to food.
Now, in high school, did you work in any restaurants?
I didn't.
Okay.
Well, do we want to count McDonald's?
We can count it. We can count it.
McDonald's was my first job.
Okay.
Yeah. I made a lot of, I mean, I fried a lot of fries.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something.
It taught me a lot in terms of just showing up for work on time,
sure.
And having someone kind of oversee and make sure, you know, I was well-trained, talking to customers even when they're disgruntled, and just being a team player.
Sure.
Yeah, that's what I learned at McDonald's.
Well, I mean, listen, those are big things.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think we can't, I don't think we can undermine a lot of that. I mean, in any industry, like whether you're in hospitality, food, or doesn't matter what, like being a team player, unless you're a solopreneur working by yourself for yourself, you're gonna be working with, even then you're working with other people,
yeah.
You know, contractors or different. I mean, so, and then dealing with customers and handling situations. And so, you know, or the discipline of being on time and showing up for work. And so, I think that's awesome. I grew up working for my dad's restaurant. And so kind of the same thing, you know, every weekend, you know, Friday night, Saturday night, I was, you know, he expected me to be there early, you know, 15, 20 minutes, you know, get everything, you know, prepped and ready, you know, for the shift. And so anyway, okay. So you graduate high school.
I did.
And the thoughts were you're going to culinary school, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I didn't know I wanted to do that. Back to Miss Carpenter, we had a rep from Johnson & Wales come, and she just did one of those demonstrations. She actually made an apple crisp. Super simple, which took me back to my grandmother.
Okay, that's right.
Yeah. And so I just remember asking her a bunch of questions like, how do you like Johnson & Wales? You know, what is your experience like? What are the professors like? How do you think, like, was there another school in mind that you had? And she was just really sweet. And she was also a tall, plus size Black woman. And I was just like, oh man, you know, you don't really see a lot of people that look like she and I out here demonstrating and talking to other students. And being so like, she was just happy to do it. Like she sure. wanted to be there. Yeah. I could see the passion. And so I got her contact and I was like, I would really love it if you would think about like kind of taking me on a tour if you have any free time.
Host at the school.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so unfortunately she was too busy, but she did give me all of the information for the Wildcat weekend here in Charlotte, Johnson & Wales campus.
Okay.
And so I signed up and I went and I just loved it. I went on other tours for a couple of other universities and whatnot. And my grades were actually really well in high school. So okay. a lot of people kind of thought that I was taking an easy way out with going to a culinary school.
Okay.
People were like, Jazz, you know, you could go to Duke and you could do this and you could do that. And I was like, but I don't really want to do that. None of those things are really speaking to me.
Sure.
And so, yeah, I went to the Wildcat weekend. My mom and I Charlotte to Thomasville, Thomasville to Charlotte is only an hour away. So we got a hotel and I made a bunch of friends that I still have to this day.
Love it.
I really enjoyed the intimacy, I guess, of the campus. And I told my mom, I was like, we don't have to go anywhere else on this like college tour. Like, I want to go to.
Like, you knew.
Yeah, I did. And I'm glad that I decided to come to this particular location.
And I mean, you're close enough, but you're far enough, right?
Yeah, so. Like, again, Thomasville is really small. There's like one of everything.
Sure.
So Charlotte was not like a new world because my dad is actually from LA. So, like, I have a small country girl, but then I would go to LA to visit my other family. Okay. So I'm like used to kind of a big city, but it was a new world to me as a young adult at the time. Like, sure. I'm out here kind of doing this.
Making it happen.
Yeah. Then also being responsible, which didn't always happen, but you know, eventually we got it.
Love it. Okay. So let's talk about culinary school, Johnson & Wales. What are some things, looking back now at your tenure at the school, that you learned, you know, was it, you know, just basic skills, you know, knife skills, cooking, you know, all that? Was it, absolutely. You know, what are some big, was it the relationships you built? Was it, you know, what are some things looking back now that maybe has helped you today that you're, you know, that if someone is considering going to culinary school, you know, to get into the food space, you know, which you don't have to, but, you know, I'm sure there's some things that you learned and some things that kind of helped. And so what are your thoughts there if you're kind of looking back?
Absolutely. I appreciate going because it really helped develop my basic understanding of bacon. Mm. Bacon is a science. And it helped me when I was putting together my recipes and whatnot for my own shop. I had those notes and that knowledge to go back to help me be able to create the things for Beyond Amazing Donuts. And I likely maybe would have had that throughout like my journey with working and whatnot, but really being able to have those notes in terms of like baking soda does this, baking powder does this, flour in a brioche dough should be about this ratio, like having those equations, that those percentages, that whole breakdown and learning like those functions in college was really helpful. I don't think that it's necessary for people to go, but I do think it is necessary to basically do the work in terms of looking up old recipes, really breaking it down, using your resources out there in terms of cookbooks or whatever videos, maybe even take some courses. I have a lot of friends who are self-taught that did things at like Michael's or Hobby Lobby and really practicing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Practicing. Practice does make perfect, or it helps. It definitely helps. But for me, I like the fact that I just had something to go back to reference, to help me understand like the overall pastry components of what I am now doing.
Yeah. That makes sense. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. I mean, having a little bit of a foundation and knowledge, I think, you know, or even just, you know, I don't know, like the, a little bit of the science of it.
Yes.
And, you know, I think just that.
Especially
that,
the science.
That whole thing, I just was talking to a customer of mine. He runs a pizza restaurant in Rock Hill. This was last week, and he was explaining to me that he was having issues with his flour because when he was just kind of like, I don't even know what you would call it, like playing with the dough, like kneading maybe the dough, that, and he was kind of stretching it out, like he was calling it like, I get the window pane of the, it was breaking, which was telling him about something about like the gluten in the, you know, and I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, like, well, I went to school. It wasn't culinary school, but it's kind of a food science degree that I got. And he was explaining to me like the, and I was like, what? I was like stunned. I was like, what? Like, so you're telling me just from you messing with the dough, you know that something's off in the ingredients. And I was like, okay. Like I don't know why the rest of the day that was like, that's pretty interesting what he just told me right now. And so I had no idea. And so, yes, I think there's things like that you can definitely learn, you know what I mean? Another thing, just, you know, just off top of my head that I'm thinking is maybe working for somebody, you know, and having a mentor in the space that, and like really wanting to learn. And I think that may be another great way, you know.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on that, on just finding somebody to kind of go, you know, have under, get under their wing and learn from them, you know, from their experience?
I would say, but for me and my journey, I didn't have that until recently.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yes. Maybe about 4 years ago. Yes. 4 years ago, I met Chef Greg with Lee and Luis. And my friends, Oscar and Daryl, had been working with him at a restaurant uptown, I believe around the time Chef received his first James Beard nomination. And they were just, they called me. It was really early in the morning, too. They called me, extremely excited, Oscar and Daryl. And they were like, Jazz, Jazz, Chef Greg just got nominated for a James Beard. He's looking for a pastry chef. Like, you really need to talk to this man. And I, at the time, kind of played it safe as I was taking, to me, like, jobs with, like, mom and pop's establishments. And I really enjoyed that just because of how it feels to kind of have that intimate shop feel and with the customers, and I don't know, I really liked it. I didn't really have a big desire to work in like a large restaurant or work on a line. That to me wasn't as fulfilling. So they called me that morning. They tried to get me to like talk to Chef at that particular time.
And is this Daryl from Jimmy Pearl?
Yeah, Oscar and Daryl from Jimmy Pearl. Those are like my best friends.
Yeah,
those are my brothers.
They're my customers.
Yeah, I know. But I kind of let the call just kind of go to the side. I was like, I'll call. Like, I'll get in contact with this man eventually. But I did. And he told me what he was looking for in terms of, like, building an all-woman-led team for Leah and Luis and what he wanted his sous pastry chef to kind of do with his establishment and his ideas. And I had told him, I was like, listen, I'm a little afraid. I'm intimidated. This is new to me. Yeah. This is my experience. I had a little bit of donut experience at that particular time, and some ice cream related experience. But I was like, I have not worked in a restaurant. I was like, as long as you are willing to kind of understand that I'm going to have a lot of questions, that I'm likely going to mess up a lot of things, and you know, just look a little puzzled at times. Yeah. If you are okay with that and understanding that I feel like that I'm coming from a place of like inexperience, then I'm fine to proceed with this job.
Yeah.
And he was just like, ah, man, I got you. And I was just like, okay, that was really easy. And now I'm even more terrified.
He said that way too fast.
He did. And I was just like, oh man, Oscar and Daryl really must have like talked me up a good game. I was like, I really don't want to disappoint like myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to disappoint my friends. I don't want to disappoint this chef. But he really provided that like mentorship experience for me in terms of like stepping into more of a pastry role and not so much baking. To me, I think there's a difference between like bakers and pastry cooks.
Okay, explain.
So bakers to me are a bit more meticulous in a way that pastry cooks aren't. Like, I think bakers do more like large scale items, and there's a bit of a, how can I say, like more time management related task, in my opinion. Pastry cooks are, we're both artists, or we're all artists, but the attention to like what's being done to me kind of goes from like the artistic plate up and the components on a plate to being able to make sure that your loaves are proofing at this time, and then you take them out, you scorch them here. Like the responsibility and the task are a little different for bakers and pastry chefs, and like the roles and requirements that go into what they're doing. To me, at least. And I feel like I was kind of going down a lane of more baking related experience and not so much pastry cook related experience. Okay. With thinking about like the, so there's five components to a plated dessert, and don't ask me what they all are right now because I forgot. But I do know there's five components.
Okay.
And I just feel like those particular things are a bit more meticulous in an area to where like baking is not.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah. No, I get it.
Okay.
And also, side note, didn't Daryl and Oscar get nominated themselves?
Yes, they did.
For James Beard, right?
They did, yes.
Shout out to you guys, yes. Jimmy Pearl. So anyway, I think Kyle told me that recently, and I was like, man, look at you guys.
I know.
So anyway. Okay. So
network.
It is. So Greg, so you started working for Greg, and he's the one that really kind of took you under his wing and really
absolutely
taught you. And that was a few years of teaching and helping. How, you know, you're with him for how long?
I was with him, I think 2020. We actually, so Lee and Louise was supposed to open the day that the COVID restrictions dropped.
Oh my God.
And shut down everything.
Oh my God.
So the day before, we had a soft opening, like a media day, friends and family and stuff
like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the next day was supposed to be the grand opening.
So this is like mid-March of 2020.
Yes.
Okay.
And it changed everything.
Oh my
like
gosh.
That next day, we all received like the call, text message, and it was like, hey, I can't come in today. We actually have to jump on a Zoom call and figure this out.
Yeah.
And I would say that actually was like a stepping stone into Beyond Amazing Donuts.
Okay.
Yeah. Strange.
Okay, so let's take it back 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
You graduate culinary school.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about your first job, your first couple of jobs, you know, kind of like, you know, after graduating, you know, what are some of those roles? What did you learn in those first couple of positions? You know, now that you're able to take some of the stuff that you learned and, you know, go and actually, you know, apply it. So
right.
what are some of those jobs that you had?
So after graduating, I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to go into, whether it was like hotels, restaurants, more like wholesale baking. I just wasn't quite sure.
Sure.
So I at first started to just apply to any and everything.
Sure.
I was like, you know, I'm just gonna get experience here and here, and then I'll start to eliminate what I like and what I don't like. So one of the first jobs I had was actually with Compass Group. I worked in the catering department at UNCC.
Okay.
That's actually how I met Samantha Ward with Wentworth and Finn. Her bakery is out in Camp North End.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where she and I met. We actually went to Johnson Wells at the same time,
okay,
but we didn't really know one another until we started working at UNCC.
Okay.
But that was, it was fun. It was a lot as we like, well, it was between two different things. We made like desserts and breads and whatnot for the like cafe eateries on campus, but then more so for like catering where we did more specialty desserts and like shooters, or not necessarily like plated desserts, but they were a bit more, needed a bit more maintenance than what was given to the students,
okay,
as these were for like chancellor events and whatever private gigs they had going on. That experience was interesting as I got to see like high volume baking,
gotcha,
but then I also got to see more intricate desserts, and there being like this medium in between of like, like a semi homemade feel.
Yeah.
As some things were kind of like box mixed, and then others were more gourmet. So I got to go between the two, and that was a lot of fun.
Which I think that's probably some good experience there.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I actually, Chef Mike Bob, who is the exec at the Ballantine Hotel, who's a good friend of mine and a client, as he was going through culinary school, and I think after he graduated, he started working there at the hotel, and then went to the White Water Center, which is a super high volume. And so he just said that the couple of years that he went there, it was just interesting to see the difference, the experience that he gained, you know, because like when you're in, when you have a perspective only on one side, you think that's the only way that it can be done or it needs to be done. And then he went here and he's like, okay, you know what? I've got to be okay with, you know, having a little bit more kind of, you know, box lunch, as you kind of talked about, you know what I mean? And so he just talked about how it kind of shaped his experience and mindset in culinary, having both, you know, perspectives.
Absolutely. Because you also have to think of, like, some of these things are available to us for the convenience and efficiency and the overall, like, I'm not trying to say, I can't get the word, but oh no, I lost it. I'll come back to it.
That's okay. So UNCC catering, you're learning two sides of the business per se, the volume side, you know, for the eatery and all that stuff, and then also kind of the more intricate, detailed gourmet, as you mentioned, which I love that. I think it's fantastic. So you're there, and then what are the next couple of gigs before maybe, you know, working with Chef Greg?
So
anything else?
In between that, I actually landed my first donut job.
Okay.
Yes, my first donut job was with a donut food truck. This is when, like, food trucks in Charlotte, to me, were super popular. There was a food truck Friday over on South End, where the original Fat Burrito was. There was a lot. And I remember seeing this posting. It was just like they needed a pastry chef to help kind of bring an idea to life, and if they wanted to do gourmet donuts. And at the time, I was kind of like, I could do donuts? Like, I really enjoyed the breads course while I was at Johnson & Wales. So that's where pretty much all of my notes from school really went. Like, they were super detailed and very aggressive. That was my favorite class.
Okay.
So I was like, I can do donuts. Like, I can help this person kind of bring this idea to life. I applied. I met the lady at the time. But before that, I watched a video on YouTube on how to make donuts. And I just was like, okay, that looks easy enough. I'll go apply. So a part of the interview was I had to make some donuts and then, like, glaze them and pretty much present them and have them, like, be tasted by a few people.
Okay.
So I got the job. But I remember just being like...
Was it the first time you made a donut?
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty impressive. I would have to say, like, first time from... I mean, obviously, you were the Johnson & Wales, but... YouTube video to actually presenting.
But I have my notes.
Okay.
I have my notes with me from school, which were very helpful. And I knew kind of like just having those like basics. I had the basics.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why I watched the YouTube video, to be honest. I think I just needed to see it with my own eyes.
Sure.
And just put it into action. And so I applied for the job.
And they... Now, they already did donuts and wanted to do a spin on a gourmet or kind of...
No.
Was it a new thing?
The whole thing was completely new.
Okay.
Yes. She just had an idea.
Okay.
Had the capital, and she just needed a pastry chef to essentially come on board and execute.
Gotcha.
And that's what I did.
Okay.
And I absolutely loved it. Yeah.
And you were there for a while? How long?
I was there. Ooh, how long was I there? I was there for a while. I can't remember exactly what year this was. No, because I left, I think, UNCC at like 2013. So this had to be 2014, 2015.
Okay.
And I stayed with this particular donut shop for a while.
Okay.
And
is this where you learn maybe a lot of like the donut, like really the space?
It is. And the cool thing about it is I also got to work with the chef, the bread chef, Harry P. Moeller, that I really enjoy his course. So he and I got to work together to essentially create the initial recipe for this donut business. And so I just thought it was kind of cool that he remembered me. He was like, oh, Jasmine. I was like, oh, chef. And he's like, this is, you know, I find this to be so interesting that you decided to, you know, take on this job. And he just remembered how I kind of, I don't know, was very vibrant in his class. And so he thought that it was a good fit. And the two of us, like, worked together to kind of bring her idea to life in terms of, like, the textured donut that she wanted, the style, and so on and so forth. So it was really fun.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, like, your first donut experience.
It was.
Okay.
It was. And it was great having the opportunity to work with him as well.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so does that work? Maybe your love of donuts came, like working there, or you know?
Absolutely. My mom, I used to call my mom and like kind of vent, like, oh, Mom, this is how today at work went. She was like, Jazz, you're really working like this is your donut shop. I was like, I want a donut shop. I definitely want a donut
shop. You remember saying that?
Yeah, I remember telling her, like, because I knew I've always wanted my own business.
Okay.
And it has changed from a variety of things. I thought maybe I would do cookies. And then for some reason, I thought maybe I would do biscuits and jams or empanadas. Or I really love breakfast. So I was like, maybe I'll just do like a breakfast restaurant. But when I got to donuts, I just knew. I was like, this is it for me. Donuts is it for me.
I love that.
And so my mom was just like, you know, we have to figure out a way for you to be able to do this the way that you want to. Like, I enjoy my job, of course, but I still have to, I had to do things with someone else in mind. I couldn't necessarily put all of my creative ins and outs into it. And so now I can't.
Love it. Oh, okay. So food truck, donuts, mm-hmm. first experience, partnering up with the chef, mm-hmm. you know, learning. I mean, great experience. And then is that when you kind of go in with Chef Greg? And
no, I actually had another donut job.
Okay.
I started working at another place, and I befriended a young man there. His name is Joe.
Okay.
Joseph. He had Joe's Doughs over in Noda.
Okay.
He started as a pop-up, which is kind of where I got my idea to start Beyond Amazing Donuts as a pop-up. And he and I just like, we just hit it off. I love Joe so much. But I remember watching his journey while I was at the other donut job. And I was like, wow, like he's just doing donut pop-ups. And he literally had like a little fryer set up. I believe he was at the Evening Muse in Noda at this particular time. And he had like his dough set up and he was kind of frying there and decorating. And people would line up to get his donuts. And I remember like seeing posts online. I remember seeing articles about him. And I just started to get an idea of like, I could do this. Because Joe is actually a musician.
Okay.
No baking experience, no nothing. He would come home and during his downtime, he would make donuts for his family.
Okay.
And his family was basically like, you should do a little bit more with this. And so from his pop-ups, he eventually met like his partners and they opened up Joe's Doughs. And I was just like, I have to meet this man. Like, okay. I need to.
So you didn't know, it was like you knew him from afar.
Yeah, I just, like, I was watching him.
Okay.
Yeah, I was watching him while I was like at my other donut job.
Yeah.
But I was like, I need to meet him to like pick his brain a little bit.
Good for you.
And to just like, just see. And I'm glad
like, what's
I did.
Happening here?
Yeah. And he was really nice and he was very open to kind of like giving me the steps to how he got things going. And so I was just like, and then eventually his pastry chef had left.
Okay.
He was like, hey, Jazz, like, I actually need someone here.
I need some help here.
And so I left that one position and I went to go work with Joe.
Uh-huh.
And I think there, actually, working with Joe really kind of, the light bulb was just like, bloop. And he let me, Joe essentially kind of let me do whatever I wanted to do, to be honest. Yeah. Of course, I would have to call him and check in and be like, hey, is this cool? Yada, yada, yada. But I would say that experience, some of those customers there have come here and it's like, we remember you from Joe's Doughs. I was like, do you? Because that's a while ago. But it's been nice to see people. There are people that remember me from my first donut job. And they're like, we have been watching you this entire time.
Wow.
And it's nice to see you in your own space, creating things that are meaningful to you. But I would say my experience at Joe's Doughs was really like, at that point, I was like, yeah, I have to figure this out. And then maybe like between he and I, we could really get something going to where I could do this for myself.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. I think you know, the cool thing about even today's world, you know, having all our social media platforms and YouTube and like being able to see examples of other people stepping out and winning and just getting uncomfortable and, you know, like you seeing it firsthand, like, who is this guy, Joe? Yeah. Who, you know, what is he doing here with this pot? He's a musician cooking donuts and he's got a line out the door. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's a pretty cool, I love that. Pretty cool story right there.
I know. We're still friends.
Shout out to Joe.
I know.
You inspired Beyond Amazing Donuts in some capacity, my friend. Okay. So let's fast forward to your shop.
Yes.
Okay. When did you know, you know, so was it while you were, before here you were with Greg?
Yes.
Okay.
Before here I was at Lee and Louise. I was the starting pastry chef there. And again, back to COVID. So when COVID shut everything down, a lot of the restaurants had to basically change how they were offering whatever food or service.
Yes, yes.
A lot of people changed to, you know, pickup, like curbside pickup. So Chef Hat came to us and he was just like, we need options that are enticing and for people to just be able to take home and heat up or and enjoy, you know, within their own confinements or whatnot. So he came to me and he was just like, you like donuts, right? I was like, I love donuts. He was like, offer a donut box. And so, or a donut or pastry box. And so that's what we started to do.
Okay.
Along with the other offerings that Lee and Louise had for like family meals is that I got the opportunity as a pastry chef to just create a pastry box. He didn't necessarily have too much to do in terms of what I offered. He just wanted like 5 to 6 items. And that is really how I began to practice with my donut recipe. I took that as an opportunity to start playing around with a basic brioche recipe. And anytime we offered a pastry box, I would throw in a donut, like the specialty donut of the box. It would be like donuts, cookies, blondies, brownies, whatever. But I would always focus on the donut. And so we did that for a while. I have no idea how long COVID lasted. It felt like forever.
A couple years, yeah.
But that was really when I guess you can say I was stepping into like the pop-up aspect of things.
Okay.
I went on my social media and I began to ask people like, hey, if I do a donut pop-up, how many of you would come and kind of, you know, support? Was it that same year? Or maybe it was the following year.
Okay.
But I was asked to participate in a fundraiser for the Culture magazine. They had reached out to bakers kind of within the Carolinas and around to put on a bake sale and then give a portion of the proceeds to the magazine. And it just so happened that the date that was given to me was National Donut Day. So I was like, I already know what I'm gonna do. This is easy. No brainer. I did my first donut pop-up out of Lee and Louise for that for the Culture magazine. And it was crazy.
Uh-huh.
I forgot how many boxes I had, but
crazy,
I just
like in a
knew.
Good way?
It was crazy in a good way, but it also made me like assess my kitchen space afterwards.
Gotcha.
And what I could actually produce in that particular kitchen with the equipment I had and so on and so forth. So I think for my first bake sale, I might have got a little ahead of myself.
Okay.
Because I remember being on the verge of like a breakdown. And I sent the Lee and Louise staff at the time a message. I was like, hey, I need everybody to get here. These boxes are supposed to go out at 10 o'clock. The kitchen is covered in flour. I only have like X amount of boxes finished. Get here, please. I didn't even have enough dough to finish the boxes. My primary base is a brioche dough. I had to make an audible and make old fashions to cover the rest of the boxes, but people loved it. They didn't even know the craziness that had happened to get everything out the door.
Yeah,
they just was like, Jazz, if you ever, I remember getting like emails, messages on Instagram, and people were like, if you open a shop, we will come to support you because these donuts are absolutely ridiculous.
Wow.
Yes. And no one knows what that kitchen looked like, but we did
it. Or the stress levels or anything.
Oh, yeah, I was super stressed. I was super, and I remember looking out the door of the restaurant, and there was a line of people just waiting for their donut boxes, and I was just like, my heart was beating. Ooh, sorry. My heart was beating like crazy, and I was just like, I really hope people enjoy this.
Yeah.
And I got a lot of, like, I got a lot of great feedback, but I even received, like, some criticism that helped me continue to, like, perfect my donut recipe. I was like, okay, let me look at this and see what people are saying. How can I take this information and then go back and assess my recipe to make it more so what I want it to be? So it was a lot of fun.
I think that's very, I don't want to say interesting, but like very good feedback, because I think a lot of times in general, we have a lot of ambitions in our mind, but until you actually get in there and start executing, like your first pop-up, you're like, wow, you know what? I do need to take a look at kitchen size, input, output, ingredients, raw materials, like you, because you really don't know until you start. And so I think that is something that maybe some people should think about, you know what I mean? Whether you have a food truck or a catering company, it's like, what are some of your, you know, say you're a startup catering company and it's like, all right, you get a bid for 1,000 person. Okay. Do I have the capacity to, you know, like start, do I have the team, the people, the help, you know? I think these are good questions just to ask, you know? And so I like that. Like they really got a good feel of, okay, you know what? If I were to redo this again,
what would I change?
Yeah. Like what are some things that I would need to adjust to make this less stressful for myself?
Absolutely.
So I like that.
And that's how I approached all of my pop-ups, to be honest. I took it as an opportunity to figure out, how can I make this better? How can I make this easier? And then Chef used to tell me, he used to be like, Jasmine, you know, time yourself doing these tasks. So that way you can have an idea of like how long it should take you to, you know, how long does it take me to make the items for a pop-up? And so that's what I began to do. And that's what I do here also. And that's how I know, like, even if I'm not here, I know what's going on just by the time. Yeah. Like where my staff is in the morning, I'll be like, okay, 6:15, they should be here. Then I'm like, they're not here, something happened. And they're like, how do you know? I was like, I've done this enough times to know where you should be in production.
I love that.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good advice from Greg.
Oh, like absolutely.
I really like that. Okay. How many, you may not know this answer, how many pop-ups do you think you did before maybe really like, you know what, I think I'm ready, or I think I would like to start looking into real estate and finding a, do you remember like the
I don't. Eventually, you know, the restrictions were lifted for COVID and I continued my pastry chef job. But I also had talked to Chef and I was like, hey, is there an opportunity that I could continue my pop-ups while still being here? And so I juggled the two for a while. And I think that went on for about a year.
Okay.
To where I was like, okay, I believe I could step out and just maintain my pop-ups and be okay.
Okay.
And so I left my pastry chef job to pursue my pop-ups more and talked to Chef about it. And it just so happened that around this time, he was looking for commissary space to focus on catering. So I was like, hey, Chef, can I, you know, use the commissary kitchen when you guys aren't there to continue to put on my pop-ups? And that's what happened. So he let me use the space whenever they weren't there, like prepping things. And I started to do my pop-ups every Saturday with Hex Coffee in Camp North End. So they allowed me to use their space out front to sell donuts. I did that once a week on Saturdays. And then I would do like events around Charlotte as well. So I'm not entirely sure how many pop-ups I did. Quite a bit. And it was just myself and one other person.
Like 100, you think? Was it like 10 or was it 100? Like what, you know, like I'm just curious.
I would say it's somewhere between 60 and 70.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you did them pretty regularly.
Yes, yes. Every Saturday for maybe a little over a year, people could find me at Hex Coffee.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I started to do like Hex Coffee. And then in the midst of this, Archive opened. And so I met Charisse with Archive and I did a few pop-ups there. I did like catering orders. I tried to push it as much as possible to let people know that Because I built a bit of a reputation at Leon Luis as the pastry chef. So people were already following me on social media. And that's the other thing is, with my entire journey, I pretty much just documented it on Instagram.
Love that.
My Instagram name is Confections of a Martian. And it's kind of a spin off of Usher's Confessions album where he just kind of told all his business. But I took inspiration from that and I was like, you know, I'm just going to detail what it has been like being a black pastry chef here in Charlotte. And, you know, I told stories about the good, the bad, the ugly. I asked for help when I was like working on a recipe or resources. And that's pretty much how I like built a community of like, I call them my pastry pals. Some of them are here, some of them like on the other side of the country. Some of them aren't even in the country. And I just use it as a platform to really connect and gather resources and eat intel to help me whenever I need it most.
Yeah. I mean, which is good advice for anybody.
Absolutely.
You know, build a brand, build a community, build a team, you know, ask for some advice. It's
ask
okay. Like it's fine. Like you don't have to have everything figured out from the get. You know what I mean?
I still don't.
Right? Well, I mean, it's just, I think it's a very, you know, humbling thing. Like, you know what? Like, all right, cool. Like, I'm still learning. Like, hey, guys, some feedback. You know, come here and try this and see what you think.
Yes.
You know, I love that.
Yes. And that's how I promoted the pop-up, actually, was just Instagram. Just Instagram, telling stories, and then people would eventually, like, share it. It was a lot of word of mouth. That's how everything kind of spread it.
Sure.
Word of mouth. And then I began to, you know, catch the attention of, like, publications here in Charlotte. So South Park Magazine and I think eventually Our State Magazine. I was one of Talenti's, like, pastry chef honors in, what year are we in? 2022?
Okay.
Which was really cool. I was surprised I was even on their radar, to be honest, and I was able to, you know, I guess get that exposure through my pop-ups. I don't really know who's watching me, and it was just impressive to know that someone with Talenti and Black Food Folks had their eyes on me and my pop-up. So I was like, oh man, this is really cool. But I would definitely say my pop-ups like helped. You know, it was like a stepping stone to get into the space.
Yeah.
Meeting people, talking about how passionate I am, having people taste the product.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of continued to put myself the right place at the right time.
Love it.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay. So all these pop-ups, you're learning, you know, you're using the commissary, you know, you're being smart about stuff, you know, like that. You know, then obviously eventually leading to getting an actual brick and mortar, actually
yes.
a physical retail location.
Ooh.
So how did you find this location? How did it together?
Initially Bay Haven was actually going to add a few more concepts to Camp North End. Bay Haven is Chef Greg's hospitality group.
Okay.
So I was going to do that initially, but unfortunately things didn't work out. But again, Chef being the person he is and kind of like my mentor and whatnot, he just continued to put me in contact with the right people. So I ended up meeting Dalton with Radow Hospitality,
mm-hmm.
and I had the opportunity to sit down and talk to him about Beyond Amazing Donuts and what I would like to do. And he is essentially, I guess you could say, my partner.
Okay.
And that's how I basically found this place and was able to rally up the capital and whatnot to open my first brick and mortar.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And you guys opened, we said July of 2023?
Yes, July 29th, 2023.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are some things that you've learned, you know, as we kind of, you know, wrap up your story and kind of, you know, hear, what are some things that you learned maybe in your first, because we're 9 months in, something like that?
Coming up. Yes, yes.
So what are some things in your first 6 to 9 months, you know? I mean, so if someone's watching this and they want to start a business,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're like, you know what, cool, I'd love to have a food truck or have a software business or a landscape company or a roofing company. What are some things that as a new business owner you should expect, you know, so you're not caught off guard? What are some things that maybe you didn't expect that happened that you learn from and you want to pass this knowledge on to them? I mean, what are some takeaways? You know, was it harder than you thought? Was it, you know, harder to find staff, team members, culture? Was it, I don't know, I'm just throwing out little, little hooks to see if anything.
A couple of things that have stood out to me. One, staffing has definitely been a little difficult. I know that the hours to have in donut shop are not the most desirable. We get here at 3 a.m. to start production and get the shop open by 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. The 3 a.m. shift has been one of the most difficult shifts to find someone because
it's early.
It is so early. Yes. Yeah, the people that are here now, we always say, see you dark and early instead of bright early in the morning. So staffing for something that requires people either to work overnight or super early in the morning has been difficult. But the other thing is to basically have systems and methods in place for every task.
I love that.
Yes, I have sheets in here, like up front. I have sheets in the kitchen. I try to make sure I take the doubt or the questioning of task out of everything. Mm. Try to make it as simple as possible. And even that is an ongoing process because something will happen. I'm just like, oh, we need to, like, I need to have a chart for this and stick it in here so that way this won't be something that will turn up again.
Sure.
So I have cleaning tasks. I have, you know, all of the recipes. I have charts for basically scaling the dough, proofing the dough, baking and frying the dough. Anything, you know, related to dough production, I likely have the systems already written out and laminated somewhere so people can just use it as a reference and they don't have to think about what's next. And I would say that's very helpful, is really knowing your product, knowing the process behind how to produce that product and being able to have it like copy and paste so that I can train this individual can train the next individual. And that to me has been one of the most fulfilling aspects of this, is watching someone, like one of my staff members then take a new person and watch them train somebody. And I'm like, oh man, I did a good job.
Yeah.
That I really have enjoyed that because I am hard on myself in terms of like delegating duties or even more so like talking through things. I always tell people I can't talk. Like I feel like I'm chewing on my words. And so being able to articulate that and then seeing the next person take my words and my training and give it to the next person, I'm like, I'm actually not bad at this. Or as bad as I thought I was. So that's, I have really enjoyed that.
I mean, we're our own worst critics.
Oh yeah, I am. So,
well, I mean, we all are, you know what I mean? It's like, oh man, I could have been better. I could have done better, whatever. But I think that's very powerful what you said about creating systems, knowing your product. I mean, I think sometimes, you know, whenever we start a new venture or a business, I think some of those details get kind of missed or left off, and it's hard to duplicate yourself into other people if they don't know the details of everything. And so I think that's why franchises do so well. Back to McDonald's.
Yeah.
I mean, when have you ever seen a McDonald's close? Not very often, right? They a lot of them succeed because there's systems.
Yeah.
Like there's processes for everything.
Everything. You know, and my friend Justin Hazleton is the one person I would give a lot of credit to that. Cause he's like, Jasmine, you have to have your systems in place for this, even for making the coffee. I'm like, even the coffee? Like the coffee, you just press two buttons. And he's like, no, have it written out so that everyone knows this is how you brew the coffee. And I'm like,
love that.
Okay. And so I try my hardest to do that with just about everything here to make it as simple as possible and as like teachable as possible.
Yeah
so I shouldn't be the only one who has access or knows how to do these things. Everyone should be able to do it. Yeah.
I love that. Okay. So let's talk about the donuts here. Like, do you guys have set donuts? I mean, you know, let's talk about how many, I don't even should call it flavors.
Yes.
How many, like, you know, give us a little context as far as what people can expect if they haven't been here yet.
Right. And you should come. We have 6 staple flavors.
Okay.
The staple flavors were created just by my continued experience as a pastry chef. So the brown butter with sorghum caramel is one of our most popular staple flavors. And it's the flavor actually inspired by my grandmother.
Okay.
Because she would eat slices of like white bread with molasses and room temp butter. She would just like put it on a bowl. I mean, not a bowl, but a plate and just kind of scoop it up. And that's kind of my interpretation of that memory and of that flavor profile. So my 6 staple flavors are flavors that are inspired by people or situations and things of that nature. So we have the 6 staple flavors, which are our vanilla glaze, just the OG. Mm. We have raspberry sprinkles, which is my personal flavor or favorite. We have a vanilla old-fashioned sour cream-based donut. So the old-fashioned is the only base that's different from the remaining donuts, as the primary base is a brioche dough. We have a black garlic everything, which is similar to like an everything bagel flavor. It's our most intimidating flavor, but it's absolutely amazing. The brown butter, and we have a chocolate honeycomb. And the chocolate honeycomb is actually like my interpretation or spin on a Boston cream. So it's chocolate glaze with a chocolate pastry cream and a honeycomb like candy cider on top. So those are the 6 flavors. Those are always on our menu.
Okay.
And then I have 3 to 4 seasonal flavors. The idea behind the seasonal flavors is, of course, to use local agriculture. I get a lot of our items from Freshless. Freshless is kind of the middleman between restaurants and farmers or other purveyors to get fresh items and whatnot in your establishment. So I like to see what they have available and create items from that. My goal with our flavors is to basically open up people's idea of what a donut could actually be. That's why we have things like the black garlic everything. In the fall, we had a savory pumpkin spice that had a like Moroccan spice blend on top of it.
Mm.
And like this pistachio cranberry granola type situation. It was really good, but it's different from the pumpkin spice that everybody associates themselves with.
Okay.
So that's kind of what I want to do here with our flavors, is kind of take people on a journey with us and just create some really cool, funky flavors, but then also maybe take a classic and then change it a little bit. So I'll hear people say, oh, where's the maple bacon? We will likely do something kind of like a maple bacon, but I will change it up a bit to make it more of a Beyond Amazing Donut experience. So right now we're about to switch our winter menu to our spring menu, and all of that information will be on our Instagram likely within the next week or two.
Perfect.
Yeah.
What is your best-selling donut?
The brown butter with sorghum caramel.
Okay.
That's our best-selling staple flavor. I would say out of the seasonal flavors that we've had so far, one of the first flavors we had on our menu when we opened was a blueberry French toast. And I really love the blueberries from Nebadai Farms with Chef Bernard. Not Chef Bernard, Farmer Bernard, sorry. But he has the best blueberries here. He's kind of in the Mint Hill area.
Okay.
But you can look him up and go, like, do fresh blueberry picking. They just, it tastes like candy. They're so good.
Wow.
But it was a blueberry glaze with, like, a cinnamon crumble on top and a drizzle of maple syrup. And people just really enjoyed that donut. Yeah.
Sounds good.
It was really good. It was really good. So I'm interested to continue to introduce people to like flavors. We have some hit or miss flavors, which is fine. But I just like to see people be so excited to see what we do next. My goal is to not use like processed foods and whatnot. Maybe more so take inspiration for some of these items. Like instead of throwing Snickers on a donut, we'll take the components of a Snickers and make everything in-house. I would like to continue to make as much as possible in-house.
Love
the
it.
Only thing that we don't make are like the sprinkles on the raspberry sprinkle. That's pretty tedious. So everything else though will be made in-house.
Love that.
Yeah.
Love that. Okay. As we wrap up, let's talk about maybe some advice. You know, if someone's out here and, you know, they just have that itch where they want to do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've always thought about owning their own business or something of that effect. You know, give maybe the audience one piece of advice on some things to work towards, you know, what are some recommendations or some things that you recommend, you know, as far as any thoughts about continuing to learn or being humble or finding a mentor and anything on someone's journey starting out and, you know, taking those first few steps.
Understood. I would definitely say look up groups where you are, like the small business groups or pastry groups or whatever it is that you're doing. There is likely a group somewhere that can help you get the resources and connect you to someone who could help you with what you're looking for. I can be a very shy person at times, and so I kind of stop myself from going into those events or those gatherings, but they're very helpful. They're very helpful in teaching you like where to even start, what to even look for, or maybe help you continue to put together what you actually want to do with your business. So I would say start by looking for those groups or those organizations or even like those social gatherings that are geared towards entrepreneurship or starting your own business or, you know, chef gatherings. Is it PCG? Is one of the other groups that's here in Charlotte that comprises of like a handful of chefs, yes, and they yes. have meetings and whatnot. So stuff like that, just find those, submit a membership or application. Some of these don't even require that, but I would say start there because there are communities and little villages, or just start by creating a village. I would be nowhere if it wasn't for like my friends, for them taking the time to like open up what they have learned and being in a position to where they were willing to, you know, give that information to me. So like Oscar, Daryl, Kyle, Chef Greg, Samantha, Kia, Janelle, the list goes on. Mm-hmm. I would just say start with kind of building a network of people.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the general thought of just networking in general is a fantastic idea.
Absolutely.
Because you can learn so much, you know, from the sum of everybody, you know, than just by yourself. So I love that. Well, listen, episode 9 in the books, Beyond Amazing Donuts. If you guys have not come here to try these guys out, you got to. Jasmine, I'm looking forward to it. You know, obviously today is your day off, you're closed, but I'm looking forward to coming back and tasting all the donuts. I'll have to see which, you know, a couple of the flavors that I wanna pick up. All of them, yes. Best place to find you, Instagram?
Yes, Instagram. I have two pages, actually. Okay. So my semi-personal page is Confections of a Martian, all together. And then for the shop, it is actually b.a.donuts, DOUNTS.CLT.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. So follow these guys, follow Jasmine and the crew. And like I said, if you guys are ever in Charlotte, come down this way, Montford, Myers Park area. You guys will not be disappointed. Fantastic. Thank you so much for being on the pod. I think it's awesome having your story. And we'll see you guys in the next episode.
The restaurants you love, the food you crave, and the people that make it all happen. We tell their stories on the Paper Trails Podcast with Albemarle Paper Supply.